Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have author Michael Feely back on the show. We're going to be talking about the ancient code, A Serpent Fire. And I'll tell you a little bit about Michael if you're new to the show. He's a former UK police officer. He's also an expert witness who uses 17 years of evidence gathering and investigative experience to decipher a secret, complex world of coded messages and languages used by the chosen initiates who hold the key that unlocks the door of knowledge that basically has been kept from all of us deliberately. So good morning, Michael.
Good morning, and it's very nice to be back. Thank you very much.
It's good to have you back. I see you had somebody super wonderful write the foreword to this book.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll be able to mention that at some point, but I do sincerely thank that person for their time.
It was my pleasure, I will tell you that. You know, when you look at the world today, especially what's going on, I mean, everywhere, you know, I can't even just single out America anymore. And it's obvious that the people in control are, number one, out of their minds and have constantly used religion, money, and politics as control systems. What makes them so much smarter than the rest of us?
I think certainly on the face of it, what makes them smarter is that these individuals, these select few people, seem to have access to an ancient knowledge. And because that ancient knowledge is so sacred and so essential to the advancement of humanity, they, at all costs, try and keep it away from the rest of the population. And that gives them the title, because of this sacred knowledge of, you know, the likes of the Enlightened Ones and things like that. And they've set, in order to understand what's really going on in terms of religion and sort of other sacred information, you need to understand alchemy, you need to understand the Gnostic principle of only the eyes that can see and the ears that can hear will come into this sacred sort of Gnostic knowledge. And Gnostic simply means to know or divine knowledge. And it's basically salvation through that knowledge. And if you understand those things, you realise that what has been created around them is a public level of religion and a public level of sort of mainstream teachings. But that public level takes people away from the true, deeper level of what is really being spoken about. So when you look at the likes of the sacred book, the Bible, people are literally taking that at a literal level, at a supervisual physical story level. What they're failing to do, what the priests are failing to teach, is the level that is beyond the normal public level of religion, which is all about the advancement and the salvation of self. And when people start to realise that, you can then begin to realise why these people are smarter, so that, again, certainly on the face of it, that they have more access to information than the population do. And on that basis, they are smarter than the rest of us.
Right. Well, they're smart enough to control 90% of everybody. So I would say, you know, they obviously have some tricks up their sleeves. You know, in your book, you wrote one line that really stood out to me. You said, all Illuminati are Freemasons, but not all Freemasons are Illuminati. And I think that a lot of people have a misunderstanding of what is the Illuminati. And, you know, I talk to regular people and, you know, a lot of them are Masons and they don't consider themselves Illuminati. So what's the difference?
Well, the difference is, again, it depends upon which degree of that secret society or that society with secrets that you are a part of. If you are, for argument's sake, Freemasonry, if you are at the lower levels of Freemasonry, you're talking, you know, you entered apprentice and your first 3 degrees of Freemasonry, you are, for want of a better expression, you are probably like a charitable fraternity, where you go out and do public work, and you still have certain amounts of secrets, and you certainly have initiations, and you certainly have probably more knowledge than the average man or woman on the street. But at those levels, you are certainly a charitable brotherhood. When you start, and certainly when you look into the mindset of the higher Masons, they say the lower levels of Masonry are sort of a nursery, and they will choose certain recruits, certain apprentices that they see that may be promising. And although I've never been a part of Masonry or any secret society, never wished to be, certainly in the last few months, I've had quite a few persistent attempts to recruit me into these brotherhoods, into the Illuminati brotherhoods. And the big difference is that the Illuminati, again, are a smaller group of Freemasons that are part of this real sacred information. And you are really starting to get to the high levels of Freemasonry. You know, your 32nd degree, your 33rd degree, and even beyond that. And those people see lower Masons in the same vein as they see everybody else. And the lower Masons are just doing what they believe to be what they call magnum opus, which is the great work. They're basically trying to enlighten the world. But the big difference is the level of degree that you are a part of. At right. The lower levels of these degrees, you know less. When you get to the higher levels, they then start to be sectioned away into what is known as the Illuminati, the enlightened ones.
Right. Well, you know, you can see the same thing in different levels in certain religions. You know, whether it's the Mormons, which, you know, there are many levels there to get into their sacred chamber, or whether it's the Catholic Church, you know, and what goes on at the top is nothing compared to what the people at the bottom ever know. So here you have human beings who think they're doing the right thing, but still have no real knowledge of what they're actually contributing to.
That is absolutely correct. And again, because there are certain sort of initiation chambers, there are certain degrees of initiation, there are certain levels within each of these organizations, only the ones who are chosen to be at the very top of these will be actually sort of tutored, and they will have mentors, and they will be taken from the lower levels, and they will be sort of grown and harvested up to the higher levels. And it's when you get to the higher levels, you start to then come into the true essence of everything. When you've got your Gnostic teachings, and you look at the Kabbalah, and you look at how that is sort of away from the normal Torah. And then, you know, you have the ancient Pharisees, and Pharisees means to separate or separation, because they've taken themselves away from sort of the mainstream organizations. And it's when you get to these sort of levels and you are chosen to go to these sort of levels, do you actually come into the true sort of sacred texts and the sacred parables and all this sacred information.
All right. So let me ask you this. You said the past few months you've had a lot of people come to you and want to get you involved in these secret societies. Do you think that's because they're aware of the work you're doing?
They certainly are, because they specifically said that. And they don't just come straight out with it. They sort of approach sideways, you know, and they start to try and get to know you with messages and this, that, and the other. And then they will just come out with it. You know, I'm so-and-so. The last one was a member of an Illuminati organization from Beverly Hills in the United States, who basically said, you know, do you want to join? Do you understand what you stand to gain by joining us? You know, all this fame, all this wealth, all this stuff, and they say, you know, we've seen the light in you, and they basically wanted to recruit me into their brotherhoods, and that's not the first one that I've had. I've had several in the last few months. So they do specifically say, and they do specifically look out, I suppose, for people who are giving esoteric information. I've certainly had members of other secret societies as well who did name to recruit me, but they've actually told me privately how accurate that the things that I'm saying actually are, and how it would take an initiate of these brotherhoods many, many years to reach the same level of knowledge. So there's lots and lots of things going on behind the scenes, so quite obviously they do put their fishing nets out there.
Do you ever feel afraid that they may try to attack you in some way?
I don't sort of have any fear of anything. For me, it's a burning passion. It's a righteous thing to do, and I certainly don't feel any threat in relation to that. Mm-hmm. Because I'm just going to continue to do and continue to share what I know and what I learn. So I have no sort of outward fear of any sort of retaliation.
Right. Now, you know, I think I remember reading in the book, and I think it was a Dr. McDougall, who had found that the human soul actually has a weight. It actually weighs a quarter of an ounce. Why is that important?
It was actually Dr. McDougall. It was in the year 1907. I think it's important because it can then make us realise that we are something beyond flesh and blood, but that when this flesh and blood experience ends, that is something that will continue beyond, so that we never actually really cease to exist. And I think that is important because the way in which society is structured, with religions, with everything else, people are programmed to believe that they are born, they are here for a certain amount of time, they then die, and that is then extinguished, that is then gone forever. That is clearly not the case, and I've certainly had lots and lots of personal experiences myself, and visitations and whatever that prove to me that is not the case. And I think when mainstream science starts to get involved and starts to prove these things, I think a lot more people start to take notice and start to have that belief, because science has told them.
Right. Well, imagine how much less fear there would be in the world, because that seems to be the biggest fear of most people is death. So that would upset quite a few religions and quite a few structures on this planet if people realize that, you know, energy lives forever.
Well, it certainly would upset them because they lose a large part of their control mechanism. When you look at religion, you look at the world of fear, of punishment, and you look at the world of reward. So if you do what they say, then they give you the fake promise that you're going to go to heaven and you're going to sit with Jesus and you're going to sit next to the Father and all these things that are fake promises. But if you don't do what you're told, then you're going to go to hell. But when you look esoterically and gnostically what hell is, it is the root chakra. It is the root chakra where your kundalini energy of fire lays dormant until it is activated. And that is the whole process of Christ consciousness. That is the real Jesus Christ. So that serpent energy fire at the base of your spine, the root chakra, which is known as the underworld, is the fire of hell. And that is where people are being kept by being kept in this fear. When you start to raise your vibrations, when you start to raise your awareness, you then start to transition into the seventh chakra, which is the seventh heaven, which is the crown chakra, which is then absolute awareness of everything else. And all these systems are trying their utmost to keep people at the root chakra, in the lower chakras of the body, which is living in original sin. Because when you actually say through geometrically, you can separate the body horizontally into what is known as a transverse plane. The lower half of that is the kingdom of earth, the lower chakras, the lower appetite, the lower desire. When you start to go to the upper chakras, you then start to go into the kingdom of heaven. And that basically is we are all born with original sin, but we are being kept in the kingdom of earth.
Right. Well, you know, being raised the way I was, I could never understand how people would say that you were born into sin when you're just a brand new innocent baby. And yet so many people believe that it never computed to me, even when I was a child.
Well, that's right. And again, when you look at, there are different definitions of sin. When you look at sort of medieval England and whatever, sin was when the archer would miss the bullseye, and it just means falling short of completedness. Mm. Or you can look at the Hebrew Kabbalah, where that is Shin, which is the fire, the spark of fire that ignites everything. But all of it can be attributed, and it all goes back to the same place. So when we're looking at the arches and the bullseye and missing the bullseye, falling short of completing this, that bullseye is basically Plato's Atlantis. It is your pineal gland. So when you're falling short of completing this, you are, again, remaining in the kingdom of earth. You are not raising your vibrations to that kingdom of heaven, and you're falling short of your Christ consciousness. So, and it's like some of the thoughts that I had as a young child. If Jesus died for my sins, how could that be possible? I wasn't even born. And if people turn around and say that Jesus died to eradicate sin forever, well, then why do people still go to confession?
Right.
Because there's all these things that are going on that people never question or even think about. But I was having these conversations when I was age 6 or 7. So I was sort of having adult conversations with myself and conversations about these real esoteric things at such a young age.
Right. Well, I totally agree. You know, my father was a Roman Catholic. And I remember before he left the religion, he tried to figure out, he said, how could it be, you know, you can go out and commit a murder on a Saturday night, go to church on Sunday, confess, and be forgiven, and be able to do it again. I mean, he questioned the logic of it, and I'm glad he did, because it saved me from being raised a Catholic. But then he fell into the Jehovah's Witnesses, which you also touch on in your book. And, you know, a little known fact that a lot of people don't know is the Jehovah's Witnesses, when they started, and I don't know if you're aware of it or not, they were actually funded by the B'nai B'rith, which is an offshoot of Judaism. And Charles Taze Russell, who was the founder, was a pedophile. But this isn't something they tell people when they're going door to door, knocking on your door to save you. So, you know, lucky for me, I fell away from that in my late 20s, but, you know, it had a hold on me for the first, you know, 25, 26 years of my life.
Absolutely. And again, Charles Howard Russell was also a 33 degree Mason, and it was all into B'nai B'rith, as you say. And for people who are listening in the UK, the very word British comes from B'rith-ish, which means man of the contract, man of the covenant. And that is with the Hebrew god Yahweh. So even British comes from Judaism. So yeah, you're absolutely right about Charles Russell as well, and the Jehovah's Witnesses, who are doing what they call the work. But that, again, that is the Masonic magnum opus, which is the great work. So all of these things they're doing, the Watchtower is alchemy. All of these things come from a place that they don't realize, and yet they're out blindly preaching.
Right.
One understanding of the origin of their religion.
Right. Well, you know, a little bit like you as a kid, I always had a big mouth, which all my listeners know. But when I was a kid, God, I couldn't have been more than 8 or 9. I had sat through one of their Hellfire Armageddon speeches at their Kingdom Hall. And at the end of it, I mean, it was so disgusting, because they basically were saying the only people that were going to live would be Jehovah's Witnesses, and you know, all the rewards they were going to get, and everybody else was going to be burned and rotten. I mean, terrible things. And I remember going up to, you know, the elders afterwards, and I said to them, I don't believe what I just heard. And they said, why not? I said, because the Bible says God is love. I said, so if God is love, none of this makes sense. And they poo-pooed me right away, Michael. They told me, you're just a girl. What do you know? And I said, I know more than you know. And that was my religious indoctrination.
Well, that's right. And again, they can't answer these questions. When they turn around and say that their God is love, and you say, well, in your book, the Bible, God is the one who murders people, not Satan.
Right, wipes out the whole planet.
So which one of these characters is actually the most evil? And when you look into your God, Jehovah, it's actually the Latin version of the Hebrew Yahweh, who is the four elements, the Yod, He, Wu, He. It is the four elements, because the ancients believed that God spoke and was the four elements. So again, it is something that they don't even look into, because they're told a certain version, and
right,
they believe it as gospel without even looking into it.
Right. I mean, I don't want to singularly pick on them, but I know more about them than anybody else. But if you look at the Catholic Church, you know, you could have a question and they give you the answer is, it's just a mystery of God. Now, if God was all this loving God and Heavenly Father, why would he give us a mystery to try to figure out?
Well, he, she, it wouldn't. And the thing is that they've created this fake canopy between humanity and the divine. And people have said to me, some of the things that I say in right, that they say that I'm denying the existence of Christ or I'm denying the existence of God. And I say, you're completely misunderstanding what I'm saying. What I'm actually saying is that I do believe in Christ because Christ is each and every one of us. And I do believe in a creator. I just don't believe in the way that people are being taught of these two characters. When you look at the way the universe is structured, mathematically, say geometrically, mm-hmm. harmonically, there has to be some superior coded programmer that has put all this together. Everything in this universe adheres and strictly sticks to a mathematical code. That means that somebody somewhere has programmed that code into nature. So that, to me, is what God really is. And if you look at God as infinite spirit, the symbol of infinite spirit is the circle. So if you imagine that God is the circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere, that is infinite spirit. And then when you look at the definition of spirit, which is the non-decaying spin of the electron, when you start to look at the electron and subatomic particles, you then get into the Holy Trinity. And it takes you into a lot more sort of understanding about how the universe is actually constructed. So I do believe in a creator. I just don't believe in the gods of religion.
Right. Well, neither do I. Or we can call it a superior intelligence. You know, science has been proving more and more that we live in a holographic universe and that none of this is real. And you have a line in your book, and again, the name of the book is The Ancient Code, A Serpent Fire, which I see you can get on Amazon. You have a line in the book that says, living within a fake, low vibrational bubble. You know, it's interesting to me, and I wanted to ask you, do you agree that we live in a hologram?
I think we live in a reality that is not what we think it is. I mean, I've been walking at night and I've looked up at the moon and I've seen grids coming from the moon. I've looked up at clouds and I've seen them change into numbers and then I've seen them turn back into clouds. That, to me, would sort of go along what you just said in relation to reality, perhaps being a hologram or perhaps being not what we perceive it to be.
Or a computer program. If you're seeing code and you're seeing grids, it's sure. The first vision I got was all that data floating in the movie The Matrix. You know, how all you see are numbers just floating behind them. And if you can actually see that when you look at the moon, I mean, that's pretty amazing.
It is an energy like The Matrix, and it also tells you that maybe these numbers are actually being encoded by the brain into a cloud or into a sky or into a building. Maybe, you know, we are seeing numbers, but we are deciphering them as these certain images, where I just happen to have a glimpse of a numerical cloud or a grid coming from the lunar moon. It was sort of the funnel shape coming from the bottom of the moon. So, you know, there's obviously a greater, something greater going on beyond what we understand to be reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you look at this planet right now and all the upheaval everywhere, okay, whether it's weather, whether it's people protesting, whether it's, you know, democracies being destroyed, if ever they were real, you know, a lot of people call me and they're always in a panic and filled with fear. And when they come across that way, I just remind them that they're getting caught up in the illusion. You know, if people can truly understand that they are a living soul, a spirit being just going through a human existence, they would be able to dump a lot of that fear. Do you agree?
I certainly do. And that is really why it's so important to the people who are creating this fear, to keep people in the mindset that they are basically a finite flesh and blood being that gets extinguished at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
I think if people actually realise their true essence, and they say, you know, when you look at the Gnostic ancient teachings, which is salvation through knowledge, part of that knowledge is understanding self. And when you understand self, and you look at the word, like the word data, which comes from date, which means self, when you start to understand yourself, you then start to realize that you are all of these characters that have been worshipped thousands of years. Actually, when the Bible says that the kingdom of God is within you, that is exactly what they mean, because all of these characters, all of these stories of the Bible are happening in the Garden of Eden, and the Garden of Eden is the human body. And when Adam and Eve lived on the east of Eden, that is signifying that they lived on the right side of the brain. They are above this third dimensional bubble of negativity. So there's all this reality that has been created to keep people in this negative bubble of reality. And the highest level of consciousness on this planet is non-duality. When you start to realize that everything is really that simulator, that game, that non-existence or a lot of it is non-importance, mm-hmm. you start to realize that. But the pinnacle to everything, the heart of everything, is the self.
Right. Well, you know, earlier you talked about the importance of raising your consciousness and raising your vibration. How does a person go about doing that?
For me, a consciousness is simply awareness and a spiritual consciousness or an enlightened consciousness is a higher level of awareness. And I think when people start to, again, look into what the ancients were telling us in their pyramids, in Stonehenge, in the pyramids all over the world, in these mythical places like Atlantis and Lemuria, in these mythical characters such as King Arthur and Santa Claus and all these things that we hold dear, they were really telling us about self-knowledge and how to raise our inner vibrations. For me, how I do it is that thirst for knowledge, that thirst to understand, that thirst to actually join many of the dots that give me the full picture. And that to me is raising me sufficiently at a level that I'm happy with. So if people begin to realize that the liquid matrix, people begin to realize that let's do what the ancients did, or certain, you know, the higher levels of the ancients that understood this mystery school information, mm-hmm. they can start to raise their own vibrations. They can do it through frequency of the chakras. They can do it through knowledge. They can do it by separating themselves from, as you say, this constant negative news that are keeping them in the kingdom of earth. There are many different ways in which they can do it. How I do it is by understanding the game, learning the knowledge of the game, because mm-hmm. then you can see the pieces being moved and you can see how the hidden hand is actually steering global politics and how things that happen in this world, never by chance, they are being steered to happen that way.
Right, exactly. Well, I remind my audience of that pretty much every day. People are, you know, they're kind of lost, and it's understandable because everything in this world is a distraction. You know, besides the false teachings that most of us, you know, get put in on us from the minute we're born, there's so many distractions. You know, when you look at now with the technology, you know, and where they're headed with that, you know, transhumanism, people are so addicted to their gadgets, you know, their phones, their iPads, their computers, you know, that they're losing that human connection. Do you think even the rollout of technology is part of this plan?
It is. I think part of this plan is multifaceted. And the amount of times now I'll go into a restaurant or wherever and see people, even couples, sitting 2 feet away from each other on their phones. They're not even having a conversation. When people are on public transport, on trains, on buses, they're not having a conversation. And that is basically causing segregation. We are becoming more and more separate from each other. And of course, when you look at Hollywood, how it tells us what has happened, what is happening now, and what is going to happen. Even in the 1980s, you know, they were giving us films like Total Recall, you know, they're going to Mars and sort of different ones, Terminator and things like that, when we're fighting robots.
Right.
And that is now the exact sort of dangerous course that we're going towards, when there's certain technologies out there, the military-industrial complex, that are working on cybernetic soldiers and things like that. So we are now becoming that movie Terminator, when we are, you know, right. the war against the machines.
Absolutely.
And that is where we're at now.
Absolutely. You know, there was also, for some reason, Arnold Schwarzenegger's in most of these movies. But there was another one he did, God, it had to be 20 years ago easily, called The Sixth Day. I don't know if you ever saw that. But it's worth renting. It's worth watching. Because everything that was shown in that movie is happening today. You know, cloning your pets, you know, clones of human beings, self-driving cars. I mean, it was all in that movie so many years ago that I often refer to it. I said they continuously tell us what they're going to do, but people look at it as if it's just entertainment.
Absolutely, and certainly in a world of black magic, then in order for that black magic to work, it is their belief that they must tell you what they are doing, but they don't have to tell you in such a way that you get it straight away. They are telling you in a secret, esoteric way. And Hollywood, you know, the wand of the holly tree, which is the Druids, the old knowledge going back to the British Isles and Egypt, it is that false reality. It is that Universal Studios. And the word Catholic means universal. It's all part and parcel of the same system. And that system is keeping us down, but it's also telling us what it intends to do. It is ourselves who are not putting the dots together, who are not actually getting wise to what is going on.
Right. So they do telegraph in advance what it is they want to do, like that movie Minority Report. Now we have states in the United States where the police are using pretty much thought crime, just like the movie had predicted or was telling us, one or the other. Michael, we need to take a short break. Stay with us. Michael and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Noll Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, welcome back. I'm speaking with Michael Feely on his latest book, The Ancient Code of Serpent Fire. If you haven't gotten his first book, The Secrets of the Pyramid, you'll want to. There's another interview with Michael in the archive, so you can go back and listen to that as well. If you want to check out Michael's website, he's michael-feely, F-E-E-L-E-Y.com. I have a live link here. Michael, I wanted to ask you, I'm sure people are saying, how did this guy go from being a police officer to the work he's doing today? I mean, that is a good question.
It certainly is. And I was a police officer for 17 years. So it was a long, long time. And I was becoming very, very disillusioned. Certainly probably about 12 to 15 months before 2009, when I actually resigned and left. I was becoming very disillusioned with the way in which the system was becoming non-serving to the public, and how, you know, the politics were tying my hands in the way in which I was dealing with things and helping people. But also at the same time, there was lots and lots of otherworldly things happening to me. You know, being asked by a young girl from Victoria in England who had been murdered 159 years previously to actually investigate her murder. And her murderer, her stepfather, was a spirit attachment who was smashing windows and then causing all nasty things to happen in mine and my wife's life. At the same time, I was seeing many different UFOs, literally all the time, both day and night. I was seeing dimensional gateways opening. I was seeing wormholes in the sky that were emanating UFOs. I was seeing gateways opening up in the middle of dense forestry.
Did you think you were crazy when that started happening?
I think because of the intensity, I didn't necessarily think it was going crazy. I was sort of asking the question as to what is really going on.
Right.
As I say, I was being, for anyone who's seen the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when the cast of that movie are being telepathically invited to go to a certain location, well that was happening to me as well. I'd see the spirits of English royalty, King Charles I, walking past me. I'd see lots of shadow people. I'd see lots and lots of things. I've even stood next to an extraterrestrial being, none of this world. And all of this was happening sort of around the same time. So my life was really, I felt like I was almost a passenger on my own ship. Mm-hmm. And there's all these weird and wonderful things happening, which obviously flipped my world upside down. And it caused me, with the disillusionment, to actually leave my career in the police. But what the police did for me was I became a trained investigator. I became classed as an expert eyewitness in any court in the United Kingdom. I began to recognise what is known as a modus operandi, which is basically a method, an MO, which is where you can go to a crime scene and the way in which it's been committed, you can usually tell who had actually committed that crime. So that has stood me in good stead for now looking into the ancient mysteries, looking into the Bible code, looking into all these things. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed from all of these things is that modus operandi. And the reason I've noticed that modus operandi and all of these things is because it's the same people who are stealing these things behind the curtain, behind the scenes.
Right. Well, wouldn't you think that your seeing, your vision, your intuition, whatever you want to call it, also helped you when you were a police officer?
So I think up until that particular point in my life, although I was completely open-minded, I was having, say, these adult conversations about Bible characters and Bible things and other things of this world, as far as I can actually remember, I've never experienced anything until round about 2008, 2009, and then everything came at once. And it was everything coming at once that actually opened that intuition, that opened that gateway to wider realities, and sort of increased, if you talk about it in computer terms, it actually expanded my bandwidth to what is going on behind the frequencies that we can't ordinarily see. So up until that point, even though I was completely open-minded and I was completely open to everything is possible, I've never witnessed anything firsthand. But from that point, it was every day.
Well, I guess you had your major awakening and it all came at once. At least for me, it was kind of slow through the years since I was 4 years old. But for you, it must have been pretty powerful. You know, when I was reading your book, I said to myself, wow, he's breaking down everything from Jesus to Santa Claus in this book. And I like how you tie in even the story of the 12 apostles as, you know, the 12 signs of the zodiac. There's so much, excuse me, in this one book that I highly recommend people look at it and look at it with an open mind, because it will break down pretty much everything you've ever been taught or believed in. And I found it extremely fascinating, especially when you talk about the hidden codes and how they're deliberately concealed from us. And you talk about different languages. These people have different languages. You know, I notice it when you see world leaders, you know, especially Trump, his hand signals, you know, they all have different handshakes, their gestures, their body language. And you know that they're giving out messages, you know, even with, you know, people may joke around about them having secret handshakes, but they do. So there's a lot being exchanged that the average person is not hearing.
That is correct. It is a language in itself. And again, it's the same with the public handshakes, for the public hand gestures, with certain things the same, with certain things hidden within architecture, and even automobiles. If you look at the badges of automobiles, the company logos, they are all esoteric information, but they look just like a fancy graphic design. They are not. There is a hidden message there. And I think people see at least 1,000 of these hidden messages every day, but not many people will actually decipher what that truly means.
Right. Well, a lot of them is, you know, the third eye, the all-seeing eye. You can see, you know, different shapes and copies of that. A lot of it, the sun. And these are things that the average person really doesn't pick up on. But when you look at some of the hand signals, you know, even just coming from Trump, you know, everybody knows that that's a KKK signal. So, you know, we live in a world of illusion, and it's really about separating the illusion from the reality that makes it difficult. When I was reviewing, you know, because I already read the book, so I had to re-review it yesterday just to bring it fresh in my mind for today, I was a little surprised because I totally forgotten. you know, everybody's made a new, how could we say, a new fairy princess out of Meghan Markle, who married Prince Harry. And when you talk about she didn't just come out of nowhere, that she also is of a European Illuminati bloodline. Well, that marriage never would have happened.
Well, that is correct. And the principles of royalty come back all the way from ancient Egypt. And when you look at ancient Egypt, there was sort of intermarriages between brothers and sisters, etc. And that is no different in modern day royalty, because royalty is that bloodline from Egypt. So this Meghan Markle, she has contacts. She's related to anybody who knows of the Robin Hood of Nottingham sort of story and mythology or whatever. You will notice that King Richard and King John of the Robin Hood fame, they are related to Meghan Markle. Her first public appearance in the UK was in Nottingham. So all of these things are planned. They are there for a reason. So the old concept of royalty comes from ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've known for a long time that the Rothschild family insist that they intermarry to keep their bloodline strong. So why do they feel their bloodline is so special compared to everyone else?
Because they are a linear line of elites, and elite means God's chosen. And when you look again, when you go back to the Bible, the book of Genesis, Genesis comes from the gene of Isis, which is the goddess of motherhood in ancient Egypt. She's also the pituitary gland of the third eye. But it all comes from, you know, when you look at that book of Genesis, it's the book of genes. It's all about genetics. And when you look at Adam and Eve, that is the atom and the ionic bonding, which creates Eve, which is extracting an electron from an atom in order to create another atom. That is why Eve was created from Adam, the atom. It's basically the book of genes, and even Moses is genetic, even Noah is our genetic. It's all about that arcane knowledge. Arcane is Noah's Ark. Arcanium means knowledge that is given to chosen people. So the rest of us are getting these public levels of these stories, when really that is a deeper meaning. And a lot of it comes from the genetics of Egypt, and the genetics through the mystery schools, through the Druids, through the serpent priests of Osiris, who were known as the Jedi. So and again, you then go all full circle back to Hollywood. So it's all this closed brotherhood of clubs who understand the true essence of people and the true essence of our sacred history, but they're keeping it away from us.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the crop circles in your book and the orbs around them, and for whatever reason, there seems to be many more crop circles coming up a lot quicker the past few months. Have you noticed that?
Certainly, we always go through a period, and certainly the UK and Wiltshire and those kind of areas are really the epicenter for this phenomenon. So yes, I have, and I do have my own opinions on what the crop circles may be. I do think some of them, yes, are fate. I do think the majority of them are a consciousness, an abstract thought, a consciousness that go into a sacred geometric pattern that are giving us information.
Right. Well, I know there used to be some people who used to take classes and be in a group designing crop circles, and with their intention connected to each other, the crop circle they designed would appear somewhere on the planet. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but I have my own opinions on crop circles too.
I do think that, again, when you look at the way in which the universe and existence was created, I do believe that it was an abstract concept that was manifesting to physicality. And I do think that some of these circles are the power of that abstract concept. And mm-hmm. I do think that some of them are messages. I do think that some of them, when you look at the likes of the Mandelbrot set,
right,
which was a crop circle that appeared many years ago in the UK, the Mandelbrot set is a mathematical formula, a mathematical sequence that is so complex and precise that it can only be replicated by a computer, and yet that turned up as a crop circle in the land. So there is something greater going on in some of these circles that are appearing.
Right. Well, sometimes I also feel that they are part of the Earth's consciousness talking to us in symbols that we don't pay attention to.
And I would absolutely agree. And then again, in the book, that is something that just mentioned. I do think that when you look at the universe and you look at consciousness, I do believe that everything has an awareness. When you look at anything that is in existence, 99.99999% of anything is a vacuum. It is so-called empty space. But that empty space, the fabric and the foundation of the empty space of space, that vacuum is the tetrahedron. The tetrahedron is the model of consciousness. So therefore, everything in this universe is connected by a consciousness, by an awareness. So I do think that just like people have an awareness and a consciousness, so do the planets and so does everything else.
Right. Now, I know that you've traveled a lot to ancient monuments. I know you've been to Stonehenge as well and deciphered a lot of different codes there. What do you say is the general or ancient message between all of them? What are they saying to us?
What I call the ancient code can be summed up in two words. That is enlightened consciousness. So when I've looked at Stonehenge, when I've looked at the heads of Easter Island, when I've looked into Atlantis and Lemuria, when I've looked at all these different pyramids around the world, when I've even looked at the planet Mars and even the moon, they are all intrinsically telling us the same thing, that is enlightened consciousness. The only thing that have changed between these different cultures is the name of their gods or the shape of their monuments. So whether it's Stonehenge or whether it's a pyramid, the Great Pyramid, for example, is really a giant replica of the human brain. And the Great Pyramid actually marks the exact location of the three master glands of the third eye system, which is the endocrine system. Endocrine means secretion within. Mm-hmm. Secretion gives us the word secret. It is that inner secret. That is the Great Pyramid. When you look at the likes of Stonehenge, that is the primary halo, the concentric circle, that is gathering earth energies. And when they use Presley Bluestones and Stonehenge, the Presley Bluestones have seven bands of energy which connect and cleanse seven chakras of the human body. What happens then, that earth energy goes around the concentric circle, goes into their physical vessel, opens their chakras, and it leads to their Christ consciousness. When you look at Atlantis, Atlantis basically means the island of Atlas. It is the third eye. The 33rd vertebrae of the spine is known as Atlas. That is a medical fact because it holds up the mind, it holds up consciousness. And when you look at the pineal gland, it is situated in the centre of the brain between the two hemispheres. It is surrounded by the cerebrospinal fluid. It is an island, and Plato tells us that Atlantis is the island that rules seven. It is the pineal gland as the master gland that rules over the seven chakras. That is Atlantis. It is all consciousness. The Eds of Easter Island, there are 1,000 Eds facing east. 1,000 is the highest level of consciousness, and east in cardinal points, hence why the Sphinx of Egypt also faces east, is all to do with inner illumination and enlightenment.
Right.
When you look under the ground at Easter Island, they are pointing towards the navel. That is inner awakening. All of these ancient cultures are telling us how to what they call ascend to their god state. The only things that have changed are their gods, the names of their gods, and the shape of their monuments. But the ancient code, to me, is enlightened consciousness.
Well, that's as simplified as you could make something so not so simplified. Do you believe that Atlantis and Lemuria were physical places on this planet?
The only physicality on this planet is the fact that they are aspects of the human brain that deals with consciousness. So in that respect, they are physical places, but they are, again, in that Garden of Eden. They are in the human body. They are in Golgotha, the place of skulls, which is the human head. When you look at Lemuria, that comes from Queen Mu. Queen Mu is Isis. Isis is the pituitary gland. So we have the pineal gland, which is Osiris, and you have the pituitary gland, which is Isis. So you have the masculine and feminine. And the Egyptians and other cultures believed that the only way that you could reach this god state, this godhead, was by the chemical marriage of your polar opposites, which is your king and queen. And the queen is to do with a greater soul, and the king, again, is all to do with consciousness. You had to marry these two, and they called it tying the knot, which is obviously something that we use in modern-day wedding ceremonies. Mm-hmm. It's all about the amalgamation of your king and queen. This is the chemical marriage of the two. So the pituitary gland, Lemuria, and you have the Atlantis, which is the pineal gland. They are basically the masculine and the feminine within that we need to marry, that we need to amalgamate, we need to balance in order to reach that Christ consciousness, which right. is the inner Jesus Christ.
Right. So it's basically balancing out the yin and yang and your male and female. But, you know, I've had other authors on the show that talk about the fact that we're coming to the end of duality, and that will be a very good thing for the people. I wanted to ask you, Michael, is there, if you had to compare your writing and your work to a movie, what movie would it be?
I think it probably has to be maybe the Da Vinci Code.
I was first thing on my mind was the Da Vinci Code, and it just popped out of your mouth.
Yeah, I mean, simply because even though I don't agree with where the story takes you and some of the belief systems within that story, that the reason I would say the Da Vinci Code is because the world really is that way. It really is run by the secret language of codes and symbology. And the Da Vinci Code really, really alludes to that very, very well. So far, I don't agree with, you know, the bloodline of Mary Magdalene, the Sangreal and things like that. I believe that Mary Magdalene is, again, an aspect of the human brain. And I do believe that the Holy Grail is the womb of the female, which is the chalice. And the chalice, it's formed in between the endocrine and the ectocervix of the womb. The drinking of the red wine in the chalice is really menstrual blood, which transports you to a endocrine state. And again, the endocrine is the third eye system. So even though I don't agree with some of the finer details of the movie, the reason I said that is because the world really is run by that symbology.
Right. Well, last but not least, because I made some notes that I wanted to ask you about, which, of course, I agree with you, but it is all I really do eat. You say to eat organic food. Any particular reason?
What I would say is because the human vessel is a vibratory mechanism, and depending upon which vibration you actually put into the body, or allowed to go into the body, as either a positive or a negative effect once it's inside the body. Some of the so-called foods that are not really food, they are food-like, things that we're putting in the body at the moment, have a zero vibration. When we start to eat genetically modified food, they are actually changing the genetics inside the body, and that again is by design. If we can start to eat organic food, and again, you know, we have now control over what's being put in the air with chemtrails and positive ions and all of these things that are landed on the crop. So even organic is not truly organic.
Right.
But all we can do is really try our best. And if you do start to look at organic food and things that has grown naturally, that is putting a greater intensity of vibration inside the body. And the whole concept of holistic food and holistic medicine, again, comes from ancient Egypt and the pharaoh Imhotep, who was known as the Prince of Peace. So the Greeks didn't invent holistic, it was the Egyptians. And I do believe that if people put stuff in of the correct vibration inside their body, that will aid their vibratory vessel.
Well, that's perfectly said. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I do look forward to it, and thank you very much for that.
You're most welcome. You take good care. We'll talk soon. Michael Feely, check out the book, The Ancient Code, or Serpent Fire. He breaks it down, and The Secret of the Pyramids, he does the same. If you can stick with it, your eyes are going to be popped open and say, what? So very, very interesting stuff indeed. Anyway, I want to thank you for listening to the show, for supporting the show. Like I tell people all the time, it's not always just news. I have Michael Rakia coming back on the show Friday. We'll do Stars Are Us with Joe Anthony. And thanks again for supporting the show.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.